When we think about history and want to learn the story about a time or an event, we look at the center of the stage. Fact is, doing just that results in an incomplete picture. Off to the side on that same stage is a story that will widen your understanding of that historical point in time. That's the foundation our next guest play rests on. While we certainly realize that Adolf Hitler was a monster, what ensured that the monster survived makes for an interesting story and insight into the lives of those people, which is presented in the play Hitler's Tasters, which is in performance at the Lackland Performing Arts Center in Hackettstown, New Jersey, through April 22nd. With us now to discuss Hitler's Tasters is its award-winning playwright, Michelle Kolos-Brooks. Thanks for being here today, Michelle.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And for schedule, tickets, and more information about Hitler's Tasters, you can go to centenarystageco, that's co.org. And yes, we have a link to it over at our website. I know they have a Wednesday buffet performance, for example. There's a whole lot of additional special performances in addition to the regular scheduled performances of Hitler's Tasters through April 22nd. Again, centenarystageco.org. So give us some background, because as I said, we certainly know the obvious of this point in history, but these side stories are adding a lot to, I guess, what empowered the monster in many ways, what protected the monster, as is the case with Hitler's Tasters.
Right. I mean, when I came across the story, I just thought, how is it possible that there's one more horrible story about Hitler that we haven't heard, you know, that isn't in the mainstream? I mean, there just seems to be an endless supply of them. And this struck me particularly because at this point, you know, he wasn't choosing Jewish women or Jewish men to taste his food. He wasn't choosing gypsies or Poles or anybody of the, you know, myriad of people that he hated. He chose young German women, you know, the women that he needed to keep it all going, to have German sons. And that just seemed to me like, you know, there's just no getting around that this is a madman. I mean, obviously we know that at this point, but that to me was pretty profound.
Maybe even foreshadowing what happened toward the end of his days, where he basically said to those few that were still around him, well, you know who I'm going to blame for everything falling apart? The German people.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. He went after them. He ordered, you know, the decimation of Berlin, the city that he had, you know, built with so much love. He ordered the tunnels flooded that were because the Russians were getting close to them, because there were German soldiers and wounded and refugees hiding in there. It didn't matter at the end. He just went after his own.
How much were you able to find about these women as a factual base, and how much did you have to, well, not leave to, I guess, add to, as far as, well, here's what I know, here's where I think they were going to go?
Mm-hmm. There wasn't a lot. I didn't find a lot about these women, but there, you know, was in particular this article from The Independent about this woman, Margot Volk, who was, I think, 94 when she gave the interview, and she was considered the last of his food tasters. That was kind of my primary piece sorry, my coffee hasn't completely kicked in this morning. of research, and then, you know, I just did a lot of sort of general Third Reich Hitler research as well. My husband was very excited because he pulled out all the old, you know, Hitler movies that I never wanted to watch, and we sat down and watched them. So I got a lot of context about the world. And then there was another part of me that did things like I watched the movie Heathers. I don't know if you remember Heathers.
Yes.
But it's sort of how young women interact with each other. And having been one myself a while ago, you know, I know the complications of throwing a few young women into a room together, and they're bored and they're waiting, and it's possible at any moment that things could go very, very badly for them.
Did you want to have a lesson of, I mean, loyalty is great, but this was certainly a severe case of misguided loyalty.
Yeah, well, I think that the loyalty was something that they had to have to get through the day. They didn't have a whole lot of choice. I imagine when the SS knocks at your door and says, you're going to come taste food for the Fuhrer, you know, it's not something you can really negotiate. But I believe, and the girls in my play believe in their mission because they have to believe in their mission. Because if they don't believe in their mission, then the world makes no sense to them. And all the propaganda that they've been fed and everything that they've come to believe is a lie. And it's so for me, this play is a lot about what we tell ourselves to get through the day.
A character in a play, in certain aspects, they always have to, they always think about their tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Given the position that these women were in and in Hitler's Tasters are in, do they have that future vision, or are they just in the here and now in your conversations?
Well, I think there actually is a lot of speculation about the future, because mostly because they are young girls and they're sort of left alone for long periods of time. And so there's a lot of time to dream and to imagine and to fantasize about their futures the way that any young woman would fantasize about their future. And whenever the issue of not having a future rears its ugly head, that's when things become troubled between them.
Well, Michelle Brooks, who is a playwright, the latest of her works is Hitler's Tasters, which is in performance at the Lackland Performing Arts Center. That's in Hackettstown, New Jersey. It'll be showing through April 22nd. Tickets, schedule, all the information at centenarystageco.org. And you are listening to Issues and Ideas. Is this the first historical-based play that you've done?
No, actually, I have another play that's opening in Los Angeles literally in a few weeks, as soon as I get back to L.A. Next week we start rehearsals. This one I wrote first. It's called Hostage, and it's about an incident that took place during the 1979 hostage crisis. And again, it's a play about very small people in a very big geopolitical problem. And that's kind of what I've gotten very interested in.
I've had the chance to talk with book authors over the years doing the show, and many of them had their rights, their works sold to TV, movies for a variety of projects, and they always lamented how once they sign that paper and get the check, that's the end of their overseeing of their work.
Yeah.
As a playwright, how much input can you have, do you have, from the paper to the performance?
Well, that's the lovely thing about being a playwright. You know, you're probably not going to be able to retire on your income, but however, you do get a lot of control over your play, and you are I'm very much engaged in casting, and I'm consulted about costumes and sets, and you know, a lot of these things are not my expertise, and so I often go along with something that I see, unless for some reason it hits me as not serving the script. But you do get a lot of opportunity to be a part of the project, and that's what I love about playwriting. And I live in Los Angeles, where I know a lot of people who are doing things that are much, much bigger, but once they're sold, they're gone, and they lose their baby forever.
So being a playwright to put you in a position often of being a co-producer, co-executive producer sometimes.
Possibly, yeah. Yeah, possibly.
And I should mention, too, that Michelle's husband has a long, successful career as a writer, and your father-in-law has a bit of experience in this world, too. Do you ever get input or ask for guidance from either one of them?
Yes. Well, in the way that both of them are such hard workers and so committed to their art. And I am always getting, I can talk to either of them and say, oh my God, this is really hard. And I don't, you know, the director's making a different decision than I would. And they're really good at sort of talking me down. And my father-in-law in particular, who's, as you know, has opened many shows. And there was at one point I was complaining about how a production was going, and he said, listen, you've got the best job in the world. You get to imagine something, and then it goes up on the stage. So how lucky are you? And I thought, you know what? That's the best piece of advice I could have gotten right there.
And that piece of advice from Michelle's father-in-law is, of course, from Mel Brooks. If you were assuming the obvious, you are correct in that assumption. And if you're assuming that you know all about history, there's always that one story that adds to the picture, as I said in the introduction, and Michelle's latest play, Hitler's Tasters, is indeed that educational platform that uses a platform of performance to give you that insight into history and to entertain, strangely enough, with the character development and the character presentations that take place in Hitler's Tasters, which is in performance at the Lackland Performing Arts Center in Hackettstown, New Jersey. Through April 26th, they have a variety of special event performances, too. We mentioned a couple of Wednesday performances. There's a buffet lunch situation. So go to centenarystageco.org, get ticket information, or more importantly, get your tickets that way. If not, you can go to the box office as well. And let me just get that number real fast here. It is 908-979-0900. Michelle Kolos-Brooks, thanks so much for joining us today. And best of success with Hitler's Tasters and all of your future work as well.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.